The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
How are you, sir?
This is Pierre.
Oh.
I can't believe I'm talking to you, Dr. Ray the Great.
Well, I don't know about that.
I love listening to you. You have a personality just like my father.
I don't think you should feel helpless. You are helpless.
Doctor, I really appreciate that. That makes me feel a lot better.
You be at peace, or else I'm going to yell at you.
Trying to find a reason to speak to you. I think you're the best thing since sliced bread.
That Ray, he's something.
Thank you so much for what you're doing for all the parents out there.
I don't know what I can possibly do.
I don't either.
I'm getting my money worth, I think, at this phone call.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Old age is coming at a really bad time. My most recent birthday had 50 candles on my cake. That was a piece I had. Nice to have you with me here, Dr. A. Grandy program. The doctor is in. Dispensing Doc is in. Well, that was the brand name of the interoral healing words you can get. It's now gone off patent. And it is the generic name, the chemical name, tricyclonol. Good for Bradus majoris, Maximus wimpus parentis, chronic or acute type. This particular variant of the doctor is in is E-Person Monday. And I'm going to read a E-Person from someone who said, quit calling it E-Person, you're beaten it to death, let it go. For heaven's sake. And I wrote him back, and he wrote back and said I was teasing you. Well, we'll read that here. But I want to get to my opening monologue. One of my earliest books, second one actually, was a book I've spoken about here called Back to the Family. The idea behind the book was, what would we hear if we interviewed strong families? They were nominated by National State Teachers of the Year in all 50 states as having great, responsible, admirable kids. What would we hear? Now, I, as a psychologist, was anxious to hear some of their ideas and their techniques regarding parenting, their insights, some of the things they would do. Interestingly enough, many of them would do things that would be, well, considered extreme in their approach. Probably highly effective, though. One mom said that she had gotten a report that her son was being disruptive. He was probably a freshman in high school. She said to him, and she meant it, and she had the logistical ability to do this. She was this stay-at-home mom, which now probably is about 20%, if that, of the population of moms. She said, if I get another such report, I will come into that class and sit behind you, making sure that you are cooperative and pleasant for your teacher. He was terrified. Because he knew, and she shared with us, she meant it. This was not an empty threat. If this happens again, I will come into your class. It never happened again. No surprise. I had a parent call me one time whose son, elementary level, maybe 9, 10, was acting up for the CCD teacher at church. CCD teacher called her, said he's doing these things and we really don't have much in the way of discipline that we can use. Would you be willing to come in and sit there and observe or even have your presence? She said to me, I don't think I should have to do that, because if she ran a stronger classroom, he wouldn't be acting this way. Now, that was a version of, not my kid, it's the world's fault, which really breeds obnoxious kids, I got to tell you. Nevertheless, I said to her, are you willing to do that? And if your son would know you'd do that, do you think it'd make any difference? She goes, oh, yeah, it would. I said, what would happen if you told him you're willing to do that? Ooh, well, I don't know. He'd probably beg me not to do it. Would that begging be translated into better behavior? She said, I don't know. I said, I think I do. I think even at age 9 or 10, he would not want his mama sitting there in class observing his conduct. I don't know if she ever did it. I don't even know if she ever told him she was going to do it. But that's the kind of stuff that some of these parents did in the Back to the Family book that made their statement, a very strong statement. I expect you to treat other people well. And if you don't, for whatever the reason, maybe this person is a weak disciplinarian. Dr. A, there are teachers, there are people who are unfair, who pick on certain kids, who are nasty. I've got that. But my experience has been, I consulted to 12 school districts for better part of 10 years. My experience has been, it is an unusual person who deliberately targets one kid. If that happens, if the person, the teacher, the coach, whomever, is intolerant or less than understanding of a kid, most of the time it is because the kid had a role in that. It is an unusual person who targets a kid who causes no trouble, who is cooperative, who is pleasant. That is unusual. So I have heard many, many, many times from parents, if the teacher didn't do this to my kid wouldn't act that way. As I explore it, there's more to the story. Interestingly enough, more often than not, that particular youngster has had trouble with more than one teacher, so they can't all have a target on this kid. All righty. Got to take a look at my phone, see what I've got, and we shall return here on The Doctor Is In.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
Are you paying high prices with a traditional health insurance company that pays for things that violate your conscience? There's an alternative available. Solidarity HealthShare is a community of faithful individuals and families that never share into immoral medical services, all while saving you money with prices starting as low as $85 per month for singles and $512 for families. Never fund another abortion with your healthcare dollars. Call 844-313-4999 to learn more.
Brought to you by the nonprofit Seton Home Study.
Hi, everybody. Dr. Ray Guarendi here. You thinking about homeschooling? Seton Homeschooling, 40 years of experience, 17,000 current students, pre-K through high school.
They provide the books, the lesson plan, the counselors, the grading services, the tests. That's right, pretty much everything. My wife and I use Seton, some of our children. Tell you this, two of them got perfect ACT scores in verbal. And overall, the Seton students scored more than 100 points above average on the SAT. Over 30% higher on English and reading on the ACT. It's a rigorous program. You want to give the very best to your kids? Trust me on this one. Go with Seton. It is a beautifully rigorous academic program. Go to SetonHome.org. That is SetonHome.org.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
I need you to knock some sense into me. I'm sure you can.
Thank you for joining me here on The Doctor Is In. Diving into the email stack. It's no longer a stack. It's a phone. There was a certain sense of lots of emails sitting there because depending how deep the stack was, but on the phone it looks the exact same either way. I was chastised by Eric Dumont recently saying, get with it, get a tablet, or what's it called, Eric, that I should get? He's not listening. He took off. I did a monologue. And I was a little hesitant to do this monologue because I thought, I don't know how much this is at play. It began when I talked about how regular mass goers have their seat. They pretty much sit in the same place. Some of them get there early enough so they can make sure they get that seat. And I talked about, is it routine? Is it habit? Is it better sight? It's a good angle. Is it for hearing? And then I threw this out as one option also. Anxiety. I said, is it possible that people sit on the end? Excuse me. Because if they were to get a little uneasy, they could much more easily just simply get up and walk down the aisle and out. But more so, were they to slide into the middle of the pew, it could get crowded in there. You would have people on both sides of you, and a lot of people are quite uneasy being too close to folks. So if you notice, when you come to the edge of a pew and you want to get in, and someone is sitting on the end, far more often than not, I'm going to say 90% of the time, they will get up and let you past, or they will take the kneeler and scoot their legs aside and let you walk past. They don't give up that end seat. They don't just simply slide down. That doesn't happen commonly in my observation. Well, this particular individual says your monologue about that was right on. Claustrophobia, in other words, it's a fear of closed-in spaces, and it doesn't necessarily mean it has to be someplace tight. It can be closed in too close bodies. Claustrophobia and anxiety dictate where I sit at Mass and other places as well. You are 100% correct. I remember reading about the Italians, the crime bosses. They always sat certain places in the restaurant. Their back to the wall. That was a matter of safety. Could have been anxiety involved too, but it was anxiety based upon an actual risk of threat. At the Mass, there's no threat. But I wonder, as she brought this point out, I just wonder how many folks indeed have had that as their motive. Dear Dr. Ray, unfortunately, I had to read your blog post about shunning parents. Now, when I first read that, I thought, unfortunately? In other words, is that a punishment? She, I think, was alluding to something that she's familiar with. This phenomenon is building because my friend shared with me both of her children will not allow her to be involved with her grandchildren. I was a stay-at-home mom, and I homeschooled my children up through their middle school years. I am left out of my only grandchild's life because I don't fit, and she put in quotes, into their lifestyle. Example, two parents working with so little time. And even though I looked forward to sharing my wisdom of a mom with my daughter, she does not seem to be interested and has asked me very little. That's not unusual, by the way, nowadays. I think this is a byproduct of psychological correctness. I've talked about this for probably 30-some years, that there are certain proper and psychologically correct ways to raise children, and those of the older generation didn't have them. You were throwbacks. You had old, out of touch, out of savvy ideas on how to raise children. And she goes on to say this. She says, I picked up the vibe that traditional ways are the, quote, way of the past. Stay-at-home moms are dinosaurs in the tri-state northeast coast area. I think this phenomenon, Dr. Ray, is rooted in several things. Maybe you can comment. Two income families have zero time for themselves, let alone time to arrange for grandparents. Yeah, that may be a logistics thing, but what I see much more often is an emotional thing. That even if I did have time for you, I really don't want you in my life or my kids' lives. And it very much has to do with you have a different religious and political perspective than we do or I do. That's the number one. Now, there's a certain select status to this. Many of the people who call me or talk to me or come to the office are apparently faithfully religious people. I live in their homes. I don't know if they're hypocritical. I don't know if they just talk a good game. But for the most part, they come across that their faith means something to them. And it is that very faith and that morality that goes with it, and sometimes the political persuasion that goes with it, that the younger generation doesn't like. And it's one thing to not like it, but they're very intolerant of it. Now, when I talk like this, I invariably get emails that say, Dr. Ray, you don't understand. I've had to do this to my mother because she is this way. And they're not talking about that she's religious. They're talking about that she's dysfunctional, or she's intrusive, or she's just very, very, very unpleasant or difficult or manipulative. Okay. But I'm talking about a certain subset, a very common subset now, of those generational rifts whereby the younger generation has less religion as a group,
doesn't like their parents' religion as a group, and in some cases, if not many, the parents didn't know enough to shut their mouths. Okay, so she says another cause, the shift from relying on faith to relying on intelligence. Now, I'm going to expand upon that a little. It's not necessarily intelligence. It's more the right and proper, psychologically speaking, way to do it, according to the experts. Most of these children we worked hard to put into high-end colleges with good education, but minus the spiritual teaching. That's very true. It's very true. Not uncommonly, the kids went to college, got an education, and more than half of them at least have left the faith throughout their college years. And in leaving the faith, they found more about their parents that they didn't like. I don't like that you think this way. I don't like that you believe this. I don't like that you do this. I don't like that you want to expose my kids to this. So yes, there's been a shift away from a commonality of the faith between generations. I mean, look, if you look at the statistics, under 35, 40% have now claimed no religion whatsoever, not even a weak religion, just none. Number three, they are no longer attending church. There is no time in their lives for that, which results in a lack of charity to others. I see that. When you are not guided by Christian charitable principles, you are more likely to operate out of your own preferences without regard to the effect it has on others, including your parents. If I'm not guided necessarily by the virtues of forgiveness, charity, kindness, I may think I am. I may say to myself, I don't need religion to be like that. True, but it is harder to be like that when the people toward whom you have to be like that are not as likable in your opinion. So therefore, it now falls upon you to act with charity simply because you believe it's the right thing to do, and it's harder to do the right thing when you're not guided by an overall moral system that says you must act with charity and kindness toward people that you don't agree with, or toward people like your parents that you find hard to take now because they think differently than you do. Any advice on how to stop one sibling from spreading this mindset to my other children before they have a family? Well, you can't go and talk with the sibling who disagrees. You have to talk with the younger kids, and you have to explain to them, this is what's happening. This is why I think it's happening. You don't necessarily put down the sibling who's doing it, but you say, if a person doesn't agree with how you look at life, how you look at religion, who you are as a person, they can write you off. They can say that it is better for them not to have anything to do with you. I wouldn't want it that way, but if they do that, I can't stop it. What you have to decide is whatever they tell you about their reasoning toward us, is that true? Has that been your experience?
What is conversion? The Catholic Catechism says there are two kinds of conversions. The first is baptism, which removes original sin and washes away all other sin. The second is the conversion of the heart from sin to the merciful love of God. It is Jesus who calls us to this conversion. The time is fulfilled, he said. The kingdom of God is at hand. Repent and believe in the gospel. A perfect example of this conversion is St. Peter, who, after denying his master three times, burst into tears of repentance. St. Ambrose describes the two conversions as the water and tears, the water of baptism and the tears of repentance. Jesus' call to conversion is not first and foremost to outward penance, such as sackcloth and ashes, but to an interior conversion of the heart, without which penances are sterile and futile. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Christ is the answer, with Father John Ricardo.
I repeat, I'm sure ad nauseum to the guys who are here, a line from Pope Benedict Emeritus now, who used to say over and over again, to be a Christian is not the result of an ethical choice, but the result of an event, an encounter, a meeting with the living God in the person of Jesus Christ. This and nothing less is what it means to be a Christian. So we said the new evangelization is new in ardor. That's a kind of old-fashioned word. What in the world is ardor? Ardor is zeal, fervor, passion. Are you passionate about Jesus? Passionate about Jesus. Are you zealous for Jesus? Are you fervent for Jesus? Are we fervent for the gospel? Are we passionate about helping this world come to know him?
I think one of the biggest lies I tell myself these days is I don't need to write that down. I'll remember it. This is E-Person Monday on The Doctor Is In, produced by Ave Maria Radio Communications in cooperation with the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Very, very far-reaching, 400 and some stations here domestically, that means in the U.S., as well as 600-plus around the world. One of the rules on the program is that if somebody disagrees with me, they are immediately put to the front of the queue. Well, I follow that same rule with e-persons. Now, this came from Mark. Dr. Ray, I have been listening to your e-person Monday shtick. Now, when somebody says shtick, kind of tells you something. Since 2008, now that's what, 16 years ago. I think it is worn out. You've made your point. You can't beat a dead horse. Move on to email Monday. Now, radio will tell you, not the radio itself, but I'm using radio in terms of a kind of what you would call a synecdoche, a part for the whole. That most people don't listen to a whole show. They catch you as they can, whether they're driving or they happen to have it on in the house before they have to leave or go somewhere else or you get boring or whatever it is. Most people listen to radio in bits and pieces. And if you'll notice, most people who have radio programs, whether they're secular or religious, speak about the same type of intros, the same type of outros, the same type of comments, because they recognize that not everybody, like Eric Dumont, my producer today, is going to sit there in the studio and listen to everything and say, oh yeah, you said that last week. So I use E-Person Monday because, as I've said many times, I'm trying to be linguistically sensitive. Male is patriarchal. That's all. E-Person Monday. Eric says, you said that last week. Well,
I wrote back to Mark. Now, remember he said, I've been listening to your shtick since 2008. I said, hi, Mark. Well, I've only been doing E-Person Monday since 2014. So I didn't dispute the fact that I was beating a dead horse. I just simply said, well, you know, you got that part wrong. Then he wrote back, and I think now he was teasing me. Dr. A, I'm surprised, nay, shocked, that you responded. I get a lot of E-persons, and I do my very best to respond to all of them, except where there are those that don't, that are not asking for a response. They just want to comment on something. My email was more, now see, he said email, E-person, Mark, please. My email was more tongue-in-cheek, venting than anything else. Thank you for your response. I do love your show. That's pretty cool. So a soft answer turneth away wrath, right? I think that's what would be. Okay, let's see what we got here on this one. All right, so that one's the same kind of thing. Take care of that. Move on down here. Yeah, that one, I think that one. I'm still searching. One of the things nice about going through the stack is it's always a stack, but on a phone, you have to find this stuff. So, try this one. I'm hoping that Dr. Ray could give me some recommendations of counselors in the St. Louis area. I have a daughter who is 28, and I'm getting more and more concerned about her mood swings and compulsive behaviors. Not sure where to start, but would appreciate any guidance and help. I get a fair amount of these kinds of folks saying, do you know someone in our geographic area? Now, there are several ways to approach this. There are a number of websites that list people who have enrolled in the site by geographic area. One is CatholicTherapists.com. Another is CatholicPsychotherapy.org. Greg Popchak has a group, CatholicCounselors.com, and that's by and large phone consults, phone counseling, anywhere in the country. Oftentimes, I will advise folks to call their local radio affiliate, if they're nearby one, because the people at the station may know of folks who are trusted counselors who very much would respect a Catholic worldview. Sometimes I will say contact your local homeschooling folks if they have a particular group, and they may know of someone. You can't assume that because somebody says they belong to a Catholic organization that they're going to practice a type of counseling or therapy that would truly respect. I've had many people come to me and say, yeah, I went to a diocesan recommended therapist and she told me to divorce my husband. I went there specifically to say I don't want a divorce, I'm just unhappy. She pushed me to divorce my husband. Or contraception. We had 6 children, and the counselor said, don't have any more. That's it. You're at your stress limit, and stop. I've had people come to me after those kinds of experiences. So I recommend typically that if there is someone you want to seek counseling from, you talk to them. You call them. If you can't get through to them, if they won't talk to you personally, no, you're talking to a secretary or a receptionist and they don't want to talk to you, you've gotten your answer. If someone's going to call me, I answer the phone because they want to talk to the person that they're going to open up to about sometimes the most intimate, deep things. And if they ask me my perspective, keeping in mind a lot of people who come to me are not religious. I will deal with them from a therapeutic perspective, But they're not necessarily coming to me for religious reasons, and others do. Others say, I want to go to somebody that I know will respect my deepest held beliefs. So I typically will talk to them about that. And if I can't do it, I'll refer them to someone, hopefully in the area, who will. So there you go. And that is from, that's an interesting one. Okay, I'll get that on the way back. This is Dr. Ray. Thank you so much for joining me.
Connection with Teresa Tomeo.
It is really important to make time for silence or to listen to peaceful music within that silence if it helps you pray, which it does me. And how interesting that scripture is filled with different reminders about silence. And the natural law shows us that what, once again, scripture is telling us is absolutely true. For example, according to health experts, silence may help you in several ways, including lowering your blood pressure, improving concentration and focus, calming racing thoughts, and stimulating brain growth. Our Blessed Mother knew this. We see this in Scripture repeatedly, and Mary pondered this in her heart.
Catholic Connections, Teresa Tomeo. Weekdays, 9 a.m. Eastern. On EWTN Radio.
Living the Beatitudes with Father Bjorn.
Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied. I Can't Get No Satisfaction is a popular song, but it could be a summary of our life on earth. In the book of Genesis, we hear that we're made in the image and likeness of God. That means that we can know the truth and we can choose to do good to others. We can love. It comes to fulfillment in the Sermon on the Mount where we hear these Beatitudes. It's the standard of the Christian life. Jesus tells us that if we hear what he says and do what he tells us to do, we will be like wise people who build our house on solid rock. But we make progress towards happiness and blessedness by our actions, and it starts with our interior disposition, what we want to choose. Do you and I hunger and thirst for those things that will lead us to happiness and to God? Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied.
For more about the Beatitudes, visit EWTNRC.com.
Welcome back to the Doctor Is In program. Now, here's your host, that master of mustaches, the punisher of pretzels, that cyclone of psychology, Dr. Ray Gorindy. Hit it, Jerry.
Thank you for joining me here on The Doctor Is In. This is E-Person Monday, back to the stack. Really kind of an old illusion. It's really back to the phone. I have a goddaughter who is 25 years old. I've tried for years to make sure that she is confirmed and going to Mass and church, but she is not. Well, keeping in mind then, obviously, the parents weren't all that concerned about any of this happening. Oh, next line, I should have read it. Her parents have not encouraged that and instill that in her. She's got a lot of information that has been passed from her family about me and my husband, who also is her godfather. Okay, This is a variant of the theme of a young person saying, leave me alone. You're of a generation and unrelatable to me because you are religious. Not a parent, but a godparent here. I've tried multiple times to reach out and build a relationship with her, but she is bitter and hateful and doesn't want to have anything to do with my husband. Well, I don't know where the bitter and hatefulness is coming from, whether it's leave me alone with your religion stuff, whether it is I don't like your husband because he said or did something. I don't have any idea what it is, and I don't know if you know either. But here she gets to the crux of the matter. As godparents, what is our moral obligation since we made the commitment to raise her and help her be Catholic? You did, but you've tried. You have done your best. I don't get the sense, Godmom, that her parents were cooperative with you. It would seem like you didn't allude to any of this being brand new since she became a young adult, and when she was in her childhood and teenhood, that she was pretty open to whatever you had to offer. My guess would be, you said you've tried for years, my guess would be that stretches back pretty far. Maybe you had some early success when she was 8, 9, 10 years old, but as soon as she got into the teen years, she just decided this godmother of hers is somebody she doesn't want to have anything to do with, and definitely doesn't want to have anything to do with the religious side of it. So, I'm not a theologian. I'm not a priest, obviously. But it would seem to me to be sensible teaching. My experience has been, from talking to many who are much wiser about these things than I am, you can only do what you can do. Your moral obligation is over. She doesn't want this. She's 25. She says, leave me alone. You said bitter and resentful. This is no longer just I'm ignoring you. This is hostility. And all you're doing in approaching her, because you're thinking to yourself, I've got an obligation, I've got to keep trying. You're making it worse. You're definitely making it worse. Now, I don't know what kind of relationship you could have with her if you didn't approach anything from a religious perspective. I don't know. It may be that she simply wants nothing to do with you no matter what. And again, the details on that could only be known by a lot of exploration. But at this point, you pray for her like I'm sure you have, and you simply back off and do not be embraced by the guilt that can come from it, that somehow, some way along the way, we allowed her religious upbringing to slip away from us. No, because her parents were the number one responsibility on this, and from what you're implying, they didn't do a whole lot about it. It's interesting that they asked you to be godparents, because they obviously had her baptized and obviously looked at you like you're faithful Catholics that would be good godparents, and you're not basically token godparents, which so often has become the case nowadays. So you've done your duty. You've made your case. You've tried. At this point, probably would pretty much leave her alone, definitely from a religious perspective. She continues, I do pray for her often, but I don't want to be strung along and continually hurt and beat up mentally by her rejection. What is your advice? Well, one, you don't have to be beat up by her rejection. It's not automatic. Rejection doesn't mean you have to be beat up. If she's nasty, then you're getting verbally beat up. That's true, but it doesn't sound totally like that. It just sounds like she wants nothing to do with your attempts to present some faithfulness to her religion to her. So, If you don't want to be beat up by the rejection, you don't do it anymore. This has always baffled me by so many of us who think we have to keep hammering away at somebody about religious things when they've made it so very clear, I don't want to hear it, don't talk to me about it, leave me alone. And if you continue, I'm going to write you out of my life. I have people in my own circle where morally they know better, but they're just living counter to it. And I know that if I brought anything up about it, all heck would break loose. I know this. Even the few times I've gingerly approached it, look out. So I recognize that I've just been put in a position. There was one person who had an experience. Well, he personally had an experience like this, but he told his followers on how to handle this. Jesus sent the disciples two by two into neighboring towns and villages. And he told them, preach the word, heal. If you're accepted, stay at one place. If you're not, then when you leave, shake the dust from your sandals. Which really goes beyond saying, okay, well, if you're going to reject me, I don't reject you. No, Jesus is saying shake the dust, which is a rabbinic way of saying, I don't have anything to do with you anymore. You don't want to hear this. I'm Dr. Ray.
This October 8th, our sponsor, Spirit Juice Studios, presents the full story of a hero, narrated by Jonathan Rumi.
Father Flanagan lived his life by a simple principle, that we are all children of God, and it is our responsibility to care for one another.
Heart of a Servant, the Father Flanagan story, rated PG-13. Tickets and info at fatherflanaganfilm.com. That's fatherflanaganfilm.com. Exclusively in theaters nationwide, October 8th.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
Are you paying high prices with a traditional health insurance company that pays for things that violate your conscience? There's an alternative available. Solidarity HealthShare is a community of faithful individuals and families that never share into immoral medical services, all while saving you money with prices starting as low as $85 per month for singles and $512 for families. Never fund another abortion with your healthcare dollars. Call 844-313-4999 to learn more.
Every year, couples who go on the Ave Maria Radio's Good News Cruise testify how their marriages are revitalized and transformed. When we said cabins are filling fast, we meant it. The 2025 cruise is sold out. But it's the Good News Cruise, not the Bad News Cruise. So the 2026 Good News Cruise is planned and taking orders. There'll be new special and surprise guests and familiar ones from Ave Maria Radio, as well as Father Michael Schmitz and Father Joe Krupp. Go to AveMariaRadio.net and click on the travel tab to find out more. When your children consider going to college, where are you going to find a place that will prepare them for the future and build on the foundation that you've laid? The answer? Ave Maria University. With an authentically Catholic curriculum, including 35 majors, AMU prepares students to take on the world.
I've seen the difference in my son since he's been at Ave Maria. He's happy, he's excited about what he's going to do with his degree, and he's living his faith.
Learn more at avemaria.edu. That's avemaria.edu.
Last e-person. I found out that my 17-year-old son is having relations with his 16-year-old girlfriend for the past 6 months. I was devastated by this, and I've spent the last 2 months trying to talk and connect with him on a level where he will understand the gravity and potential implications of this activity before marriage. Excuse me. And at such a young age. On one hand, he seems remorseful about causing a huge amount of upheaval for both families. Okay, I want to butt in right there, if I can interrupt. You said I found out, so obviously this is very recently, and this quote-unquote upheaval that he seems remorseful about is that it's now out in the open. Okay. On the other hand, I have found that he is highly sexualized through text messages and inclined to lying in order to see her. The girlfriend's mother seems more concerned about gossiping and dramatizing the whole thing. I feel like I've talked about this with him and looked at it from every angle, but I'm not sure it's helped at all. I feel like I need therapy for him and for me, too. Michelle, this is one of those situations where you got to be careful who you go to, because I would think the average secular therapist is going to say, hey, look, this is what kids that age do, and you got to recognize they're going to do it, and therefore the relationship hopefully will burn itself out. You got some decisions to make here. You can say to him, from this point forward, I can't allow you to be unsupervised with this girl, because you are doing things that are potentially very problematic for you and for her. Not to the moral issue, of course, and a possibility of a baby, of course, and the emotional attachment, of course. All kinds of complications involved here. That's why God put those kinds of relations within a marriage, a committed marriage. But it sounds like he's saying, no, this is what I want to do. This is what she wants to do. And yeah, too bad that we got caught. However, this is a girl that I'm totally in love with, and I'm attached to her very deeply, physically and emotionally. So you have a decision. You say he lies in order to see her. Well, if you know that, then you're going to have to decide how much social freedom you're going to give her, give him. I don't know what kind of reaction he would have if you said at this point there will be all just supervised visits here at our home. I don't know what reaction she would have. She may say, look, if I can't have relations with you, I'm not going to hang around this relationship. That may happen. And then I don't know how he'll blame you for this. There's all kinds of complications. This is your decision, Mom. But there are those parents who would say, no, if this is what they're doing, I have to step in and supervise this relationship. It puts you in a very difficult spot, because by and large, probably not too many people would agree with you if you took that stance. Obviously, you're saying that the girlfriend's mother wouldn't agree. So you would be on your own in making that decision. Are you married? Where is your husband regarding this? Is his view different from yours? After you've discussed all the complications with your son, and your judgment is that he acknowledges them, but it's not enough to stop him from doing what he is driven to do as he sees it. He probably sees it also as justifiable. He loves her, she loves him, and that's the way we are. And we're going to get married someday. I recall a survey that asked eighth graders, is it okay to have relationships with someone if you're in love with them? And high percentage of the eighth graders said yes. And then they asked them, have you ever been in love? And a high percentage of the eighth graders said yes. So that's probably where he's at. I would suggest you sit down with your husband and decide what you're going to do about this. And recognize that whatever decision you make, there's going to be repercussions. I don't suspect he would want therapy. Why? He wouldn't see what they're doing is wrong. I think he may feel bad because it's upset you, and perhaps maybe other members somewhere in your family who may or may not know about this or who suspect it. Siblings usually are often aware of these things much sooner than the parents are. It's a situation that's coming up much, much more often these days in a culture that says physically kind of anything goes. Thank you for joining me here on The Doctor Is In on this E-Person Monday. I appreciate it so very much. Good Lord permitting. I'll talk to you tomorrow. Walk with God. That's great guidance, too.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook and Instagram. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.